Good evening to you, and welcome to the show, History and You, with George Rodriguez Walling.
Once in a while, a show comes along that engages you to stop and think about your place in the history of our times. History and You is more than a radio show. It's a chance to reflect on what has besieged and elated you, a chance at changing an attitude, reconciling with someone, or rectifying wrongs. It's an opportunity to reestablish your faith in our democracy under God and in our God, and it's a gentle reminder that life, in everything it comes to represent for all of us, is short and special. George Rodriguez Walling gives us this moment every week. Back from a much-needed hiatus, our host of History and You, is back with us again. We at BBS Radio are very glad to have him back because, George, it's been way too long. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure BBS Radio welcomes back George Rodriguez Walling.
Oh, good evening, and thank you so much. Good evening to the show, History and You. It is really very, very nice to be back. This is the show where you decide what history becomes. I am your host, George Rodriguez Walling, and I am truly very, very happy to be here with all of you this evening. If you want to call in and contribute your thoughts, please call a toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Call me and tell me your views. If not, send me an email at historyandyou@yahoo.com. That's historyandyou@yahoo.com. You can also find me on the web, bbsradio.com/historyandyou. That's bbsradio.com/historyandyou. Please visit my website and leave me a message, any kind of a message. There you can tell me whether you like the show or not. Tell me what's on your mind. I would ask you also to help me sustain the show by keeping it going on a weekly basis through your generous donations. There is a donate button on the webpage for you to easily contribute, so please be generous. Your contribution to the show is truly a very special help to me. Thank you, and I do look forward to reading your messages on the blog or in any other place through email as well. Tonight's show is brought to you by the folks at FX Software and Sweet Pea Women's Apparel by Stacy Frotti. Tonight's topic, democracy for socialism. One of the rare commodities I try to bring to the show is truth. In however many ways truth can be seen, conceptualized, or understood, it is an energy force that is felt, which transcends boundaries and compels people to see what they do not wish to see. It forces us to look at our self-denials and admit to the reality of what we as a people have become. And what have we become? Some argue that we are now a neoliberal democracy redefined. A political system better fitted to serve the needs of all people or a larger margin of lower class members than ever before. A system that cares for the health and welfare of immigrants and citizens alike. A country that exudes leadership in the world not by the dictates of its soft or hard power, but rather by the soft-spoken consensus that creates an ideal and agreeable hegemony designed to outweigh and drown out any and all disagreeable rogue countries left in the world. And a country that tells people, you no longer have to worry much about who will take care of your needs or how much harder you have to work for your health, your retirement, or your family's future. The government will take care of you. Others will argue, as I do, that Americans have given up their national character, which once protected their political freedom, and that we have also lost our resolve for the right to keep the wealth we've spent a lifetime to make for retirement, only to distribute it to others because the government says it's the right thing to do. Americans for the past 80 years or so, approximately, ever since the end of President Hoover's term in office and FDR's debut, Americans have witnessed a gradual transformation from what Hoover once declared as rugged individualism, a concept of how the United States arrived at greatness, to the welfare state under FDR as to what this country has become. Rugged individualism was the embodiment of the bold and rustic American, a pioneering product of manifest destiny, an individual who came to know greatness by the power of his own will and determination, defined only by the driving ambition of his self-reliance. Throughout the latter decades of the 19th century, Americans began to build on their ambitions by being inventive, proactive, curious, entrepreneurial, opportunity seekers, and hardworking people with a sustained faith of greatness in themselves and a thirst for achievement that would have left any other culture in the world inspired by example. We came to know greatness, however, at a very high price. Freedom is not freely given. You got to earn it. What's more, you got to know how to earn it as the only way to appreciate the life you have. When Americans reconstructed their country after the Civil War, the cost of pain for the losses suffered united a once divided people into a national spirit to do more, to be more than just survive the adversity. As Americans, we pursued the breaking and making of new boundaries, new challenges, new rewards, and a mission to dare to become more than what we were, a nation of achievers by our own right. When Americans expanded industry through the corporations that drove them, the vision of using their available resources efficiently was an insight born from skepticism, moral indignation, and myopic government regulations. Captains of industry, people like J.P. Morgan, John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, the DuPont family, Cornelius Vanderbilt, the Swift family, Charles Schwab, as with so many other men of professions, philosophers, professors, inventors, scientists, even immigrants, they all converged to contribute their talents to the vision of building a national greatness for everything that was becoming distinctly American. When the United States faced the pangs of economic cycles painful to American businesses at home and abroad, people connected to the cause of seeing better days ahead thrived. When city and state political corruption was in high gallop, Americans invested their determination to make democracy work better with confidence and with resolve. When the United States went to war in Europe, our boys fought bravely and with purpose in their hearts. When facing the years of the Great Depression, their faith in themselves and the Almighty helped see them through the greatest adversity ever witnessed. Even the trauma of Vietnam was not enough to block the healing of a people that hungered more for the promise found in democracy than to lick the wounds of a deflated ego from a war lost to obsession. Americans were the first to land on the moon, and it was done with the same spirit, the same fire that has carried American exceptionalism throughout the centuries. A self-made people, together, all looking in the same direction and always ready to make their mark as individuals in becoming free and critical thinkers, one can confidently say that America was made in America through hard work and with minimal government interference. The history of Americans has not been an easy one. But when FDR came to power in January of 1933, things seemed to start getting better. Or did they get gradually worse in the long run? We'll take a closer look at his policies, but first let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss Democracy for Socialism on History and You in just a moment. Just to break it down.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX, data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX. Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotte is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotte website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystacyfrotte.com today.
Okay, I want to say a few words also about a marvelous organization called Friends Forever Humane Society, located here in Miami, Florida. This is an organization that dedicates itself to locating and picking up stray dogs or dogs that people just don't want anymore and abandon them. I went to a local store here not too long ago called PetSmart. Wonderful store for dogs and other animals. And I saw these people on a Sunday afternoon of all days laying out crates full of dogs, wonderful dogs, happy dogs, dogs that this organization, you can tell, is really taking good care of them. And they were doing everything possible to try and give these dogs a good home with good, loving owners. And nowadays, that's sort of becoming hard to do, you know? And when I saw this, I go, you know, I really, these guys are doing such good for these poor animals. And you can tell they're just looking for love. That's all they want. They're just looking for love and attention, being well fed, being well taken care of. You may want to call these people. The phone number in Miami here is 786-229-9002. That's 786-229-9002. The name of the organization is Friends Forever Humane Society. This is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. And the website here is www.friendsforeverrescue.com. That's www.friendsforeverrescue.com. Okay. Let's get back to discussing the topic for this evening's show, Democracy for Socialism, on History and You. When FDR came to power, the mettle of our character began to wane. For the almost 15 years or so that the Great Depression lasted, approximately from 1929 to 1944, the American people needed assistance through a variety of government programs fitted to help those multitudes in need. Now, let me repeat, people who needed assistance, not a handout, and certainly not creating a habit to always depend on the government for help. This habit of dependency can make people lazy because they know the government, like mother, will always be there to take care of their needs. When the Depression first hit, Hoover was reluctant to dole out a sequence of government programs to help the public for fear that by doing so, Americans may come to feel too weak, too afraid, and too vulnerable to confront adversity. There was concern that they might lose touch with their inner strength to stare a crisis in the face and wrestle it down. For this attitude, Hoover was bitterly criticized for being a cold and insensitive man. And while public pressure did finally compel him to put out a limited number of government concessions and projects, such as the cutting of taxes, the development of a new federal farm board, initiated Hoover Dam, otherwise known as Boulder Dam, and proposed the Reconstruction Finance Corporation to further assist in the refunding of banks, these measures did nurture the job market somewhat, but it became very clear very quickly that it wasn't going to be enough to help make any substantial difference. Looking back on the crisis, government help was definitely needed because Hoover could not possibly have known in 1929 the degree of severity the crisis would have had on the lives of so many Americans. Yes, FDR did do the right thing in getting the government involved as part of the cure. The rationale and agendas of programs in the New Deal, programs like the National Recovery Administration, the Agricultural Administration, Civilian Conservation Corps, the Banking Act, Civil Works Administration, Works Progress Administration, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Social Security Act, the Federal Depository Insurance Corporation, which is still around today, Federal Emergency Relief Administration, Federal Housing Administration, Securities and Exchange Commission, National Youth Administration, Farm Security Administration, and the Rural Electrification Administration. They all had the right idea to begin designing and reinventing the infrastructure of business in the entrepreneurial spirit that Americans have come to know for so long, the resolve for self-reliance, and the conviction of knowing how to succeed. But scores of government programs was not to be enough to cure the crisis in question. Only because we know now that anemic conditions would continue to gnaw at the economy for at least another decade. And while we also know that World War II was the event that finally got America up and out of the abyss, yet the cure still did not come from the war, although it did help tremendously. The cure came from within us. Our willingness to stand up, our desire to push and to grow, our determination to stay the course, were all conscious and collected decisions we made to better ourselves and our families for future generations. It all sounds familiar, I know, perhaps even nauseating, because of the many times we've heard it. But we also need to be reminded of the kinds of people we are based on the choices we've made in the past that have made us into what we are today, a people of resolve. But in beating the Depression, something else happened along the way. FDR, through all of his government programs and assistance, also created for Americans the welfare state. A state within a state, an inner government layer of features and conditions to further assist and carry Americans in achieving their academic, business, medical, social, and personal goals. This welfare state grew exponentially and came with it an embedded autonomy implanted deep in its bureaucracy to determine self-sustaining policies with a will of its own. This inner government slowly began to regulate our democracy in every aspect. And it's when you have too much government imposition through too much government regulation in the public and private sectors, these new conditions no longer have allowed Americans to be what they once were, independent, self-reliant, and pioneering. Just like a belt that tightens and constricts, this new system has a name. A name you may not want to hear, one that you may not even agree with. But the inescapable truth of it remains as the new normal that stares back in icy silence until whispering its name of socialism. Like watching a basketball game with too many refs, team players and coaches alike will inevitably complain about how players are no longer being allowed to play the game, either because of too many rules getting in the way or conflicting calls from several refs regarding infractions and flagrant fouls. The point is that too much imposition to regulate the game takes away from the play of the game. And when you have a president like Obama, who goes out of his way to create and nurture a growing government of unprecedented proportions, controlling society through an excessive amount of regulation, the game of democracy and free market, like basketball, can no longer be played in the same way it was intended, competitively, individually, and creatively. Lucky for the United States that it doesn't have a very long history of feudal society like Europe did, perhaps only 50 years or so of plantation life in the Old South throughout the first half of the 19th century, which has always made it tougher for socialism, even communism, to take root based on the absence of a long socialist history. In particular, this was one of the arguments historians were making as to why socialism under the leadership of Daniel De Leon and Eugene Debs in the beginning of the 20th century didn't flourish as expected. Be that as it may, socialism, especially under the tutelage and affirmation of President Obama, is with us now more than ever before. Even Obamacare, his signature legislation, is aiming to overhaul our entire medical health system. But let me tell you something hard to hear. Americans seem to prefer socialism now to democracy. I base this claim on the fact that Obama was elected and then re-elected to lead this country under his socialist agenda. And please, please don't tell me you had no idea of his socialist plans. Heaven knows he did give enough hints about what he had in mind to do if elected president. Do you remember the whole idea of his redistribution of wealth plan? And about how businesses weren't built by their owners, but instead through the help of the government? How you as the owner didn't have anything to do with that? How about the blatant lies of healthcare promising to be cheaper? How you were promised to keep your doctor and your old medical plan if you chose, but it was all taken away anyway? How about Social Security checks being diminished at the expense of funding Obamacare? Do you also remember how people were promised not to be affected by new tax laws for those who earned below $250,000 a year? How states were promised more tax money for infrastructural projects like highways and tunnels, but no such projects ever came to fruition? How Detroit and other cities throughout the United States were never going to see bankruptcy? How the IRS arbitrarily targeted conservative groups like the American Tea Party and others for their fundraising activities in opposition to Obama's policies? And how about the extra monitoring the government has taken on regarding our Twitter, Facebook, text messaging, and email accounts? Oh, and this is an even better one. Do you recall when Obama supported the efforts of Democratic senators, specifically led by the efforts of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, to do away with the right to filibuster in the Senate? The legitimate right of senatorial free expression to block legislation of the majority party? You know, and the list goes on, and the list is long. Our president wears the cloak of socialism around his shoulders with such disdain toward everything American that an arrogant condescension to suppress a resurging past has befallen like an iron curtain to become forever busy in its vigilance. But be careful, though, not to be too critical of our president. You just might be accused of being a racist. So if socialism is quickly becoming the mindset of public demand, then what can we expect from it? What can we expect from it? Many adjustments. You may not like it, though. But first, let's take another quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss Democracy for Socialism on History and You in just a moment.
Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotti is a woman's contemporary clothing line and nationally recognized brand. Sweet Pea is an innovative collection that pairs flirtiness with sensibility. Our Sweet Pea woman can be running a board meeting, watching a soccer game, or dining out with friends. Sweet Pea is recognized to be eye-catching and edgy. We empower our loyal worldwide customer base by creating clothing that fits their lifestyle. She is on the move and believes that Sweet Pea is her go-to on almost all occasions. Day into night, Sweet Pea's stylish blouses move with you and your busy day. Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, Anthropologie, and the Sweet Pea by Stacy Frotti website feature new Sweet Pea designs weekly. We have been creating beautiful clothing for 16 years, and there is no sign of us slowing down. Fashion is cyclical, it is true, but style is a constant. Please visit www.sweetpeabystacyfrotti.com today.
Just to break it down. We build it up just to break it down.
In a world dominated by frameworks, platforms, and tools, it's difficult to know how to win when the only certainty is change. At Software FX, customer service and highly useful products are our main goals. Over 20 years of experience, coupled with ideas and inspiration from more than 150,000 developers all over the world, have turned into business intelligence tools that provide more choice, convenience, and value to our customers and partners. Yes, technologies do change, but Software FX has your back. That's Software FX, data visualization for every need, every platform. Call us today, toll free, at 1-800-392-4278. That's 1-800-392-4278. Be the master of your data. Software FX.
Okay, and we are back discussing our topic for this evening's show, Democracy for Socialism, on History and You. So now that we are closer to being a socialist country than a democratic one, what can we expect from it? Well, we can start by pointing out how similar we are to those European socialist countries that have become notorious for running up their national debt to amounts that would and did justify, in no small measure, mob violence. Our present national debt is approaching $18 trillion. Our national credit rating has been downgraded. Our spending spree continues unbridled. And tensions similar to those of Europe are rising. crime, shootings, immigration issues, and a deteriorating loss of international respect for the United States are also on the rise, which are consistent with the incompetent leadership we currently have. Now, remember, be careful. Don't be accused of being a racist. We can also come to expect, as a socialist country, to find a blend of socialism and democracy, with democracy being the outer political system that sells to the public the illusion of what we are or pretend to be in pure form, a democracy. In actuality, the inner political socialist system is the one that directs, steers, determines, decides, monitors, and quantifies the measure of our lives in relation to our standard of living. What captures a resounding applause in America today is not incentive, ambition, or entrepreneurial pursuits. Instead, they are equality and order, without meandering toward any disparities that may come from the freedom of being ambitious and productive. Our political system, based on the ideology of democracy, refers to the institutions that comprise government in relation to how the political system will work. Socialism, on the other hand, can be interpreted as an economic system, which defines the manner by which goods and services will be produced and distributed. It is heavily regulated and easily prone to becoming very politicized. Unlike its counterpart, capitalism is not as easily politicized, due largely to its profit motive and thereby its urgency to avoid government regulation. Prevalent in the private sector predominantly, free enterprise is the experiment that naturally complements human nature to think, to grow, to produce, and to provide freely. Socialism truncates that spirit of productivity as a trade-off for being equal with others. What people don't want to see in America today is the inherent fairness that comes from the natural inequalities of people. For this is precisely the spirit that makes us free. This is what made us a global power in the world. This is also the reason for the implosion of the Soviet Union in 1991. Socialism, like communism, do not work. As an economic vehicle for its political dictates, socialism emphasizes a collective ownership of production resources, and it relies on the state to dictate the political terms and conditions of how the distribution of such resources will be made, will be monitored, and will be regulated. Our simulated democracy still retains remnants of what it once was, ideologically, such as local and national elections, regards for our civil rights found in the Bill of Rights, and the ability of Americans to still practice their own business. But to expect that our democracy today promote freedom, individual self-development, and the opportunity to govern, self-govern in particular, is a fallacy and an exercise in futility. The integrity of our democracy has been compromised for a long time now. But under Obama, we are no different than those European countries today. Americans have chosen to trade democracy for socialism, gradually. Let's see more specifically what we're trading away and what we're getting back in return. First, we are gradually giving up a market economy for a planned economy that relies on wealth distribution so that everyone in society is given somewhat of an equal share of the benefits derived from labor. Although socialists would like you to believe that people can come to earn more if they work harder, but this is often not true, because of the amounts of regulation that control wealth distribution. Second, we are giving up the right to worship freely for the discouragement to worship. For socialists, religion and all of the attention that goes with it in ceremonial homage and pomp has always served as a distractor for the state. Socialist leaders cannot afford to take a backseat to something else that the public is more devoted to, like God and religion. And although socialist government do not normally prohibit religious practice in the same way communism has done, hence the reason for communism being an atheist philosophy, yet socialism has frowned upon it now and again. Third, we are deciding more and more to let go of the principle of laissez-faire, that is, the opposition of government intervention in economics, because we no longer believe that such interventions by the government are going to produce inefficiencies. Our faith in the free market to produce the best economic outcome for society has become seriously fractured. Instead, we are liking the idea of giving people more equal opportunity to succeed, and that workers should have the most say in their factory's management. Fourth, American businessmen have grown skeptical of our reliance on free markets for determining investments, production, and distribution decisions, and wish to move more toward a centrally planned economic scenario for determining such decisions with socially owned enterprises. Fifth, Americans have come to believe that the accumulation of capital as the key component that drives economic activity is too unstable. And the need to continuously produce profit and reinvest this profit for more profit for producing useful goods and services as byproducts of pursuing profit has become equally unpredictable. Policymakers are placing more faith in the stability behind positioning and adjusting economic activity and planned production to meet human needs and economic demands. Useful goods and services are produced specifically to meet the useful need that is intended for the public. Sixth and final, Americans no longer wish to be responsible for the private ownership of the means of all production in their businesses. This kind of ownership is for private profit, but since this can also incentivize producers to engage in more economic activity, the returns of gains and losses has not been a stable one in relation to its independent and cyclical nature of the free market economy. In socialism, the means of production are socially owned, collectively owned, and Americans, it seems, have come to feel more comfortable and less insecure about directing all surplus value produced, if any, to accrue to all employees of an enterprise as a centrally planned profit-sharing revenue source. Americans are losing faith in the market economy rapidly. And should they? I think not. I think that's a big mistake. Every day that passes under the Obama administration is a day of socialist policy. Capitalism has become a frightened prayer instead of a confident and steady faith in our ability to succeed. We seem to forget that the market economy, for all of its ups and downs, is cyclical in nature. Once it hits and runs on a productive cycle, everyone slingshots forward, and everyone benefits from such an advance. What does determine, however, the momentum, stability, and volume of capital gains among businesses as well as markets are the kinds of policies that come out of Washington, which will either enhance our standards considerably or constrict any chance at encouraging people to do more with the freedoms to invest. Capitalism in a free market setting works for you. Socialism under compromised market conditions works primarily for the policyholders in power. Let me leave you with some thoughts regarding the differences that separate socialism from democracy by Ernest Lassigne, written back in 1887. I think the audience will find a good appreciation for the way Lassigne lays it out. In the following reading, the first descriptor will refer to socialism, the second to democracy and capitalism. One is about collective ownership of the means of production. The other about organic social solidarity with private ownership of production. One is restrictive, the other libertarian. One is metaphysical, meaning excessively abstract in reasoning. The other empirical, demonstrable, verifiable reasoning. One is dogmatic, the other scientific. One is emotional, the other reflective. One is destructive, the other constructive. Both are in pursuit of the greatest possible welfare for all. One aims to establish happiness for all, the other to enable each to be happy in one's own way. The first proclaims the sovereignty of the state. The second recognizes no sort of sovereignty. One wishes all monopolies to be held by the state. The other wishes the abolition of all monopolies. One wishes the governed class to become the governing class. The other wishes the disappearance of classes, period. The first has faith in a cataclysm. The second knows that social progress will result from the free play of individual efforts. One wishes that there should be none but proletariats. The other wishes that there should be no more proletariats. The first wishes to take everything away from everybody. The second wishes to leave each in possession of his own. The one wishes to expropriate everybody. The other wishes everybody to be a proprietor. The first says, do as the government wishes. The second says, do as you wish yourself. The former makes the citizen the subject of the state. The latter makes the state the employee of the citizen. One proclaims that labor pains will be necessary to the birth of a new world. The other declares that real progress will not cause suffering to anyone. The first has confidence in social war. The other believes only in the works of peace. One aspires to command, to regulate, and to legislate. The other wishes to attain the minimum of command, the minimum of regulation, and the minimum of legislation. The first will fail, the other will succeed. One desires equality, the other seeks equity. The first by lowering heads that are too high, the other by raising heads that are too low. One sees equality under a common yoke, the other will secure equity in complete liberty. One is intolerance, the other tolerance. One frightens, the other reassures. The first wishes to instruct everybody. The second wishes to enable everybody to instruct oneself. The first wishes to support everybody. The second wishes to enable everybody to support oneself. One says, the land to the state, the mind to the state, the tool to the state, the product to the state. The other says, the land to the cultivator, the mine to the miner, the tool to the laborer, and the product to the producer. One is the infancy of socialism. The other is its manhood. One is already the past. The other is the future. One will give way to the other. And that's all the time we have. Now we've come to that final part of our show where I wish to leave you with a final thought to consider and to further reflect regarding the signs of our times. Some final thoughts. The Chinese often say, may you live in interesting times. Our times are telling us that change is everywhere around us. From technology, political leadership, financial developments, healthcare, and global configurations, to crime, family, schools, public morality, even how your own next-door neighbor watches you. So, how do you fit into our times? How do you fit in? We need a hero in our lives, a person whose leadership can make us feel good about ourselves, a person who can take us to a better place than where we've been, someone who can provide for us an opportunity to make us accomplished again. We're crying out for a system of government that will give us back the freedom to create more political and financial security for our families. And going socialistic ain't gonna do it. My father once told me that socialism, like communism, is about a jealous and envious state of mind. An attitude that yells at those who have through hard work, and those who don't have because of hard work. Some of the happier moments for people have been in being able to see what you've come to achieve, which you once never thought possible, and you've done it through a system that has allowed you to accomplish what you now have. Thank God we are all not equal, for it is within our different capacities to do and not do that the things we have in life has come to us from the attempts we've fought so hard to get. under a democracy and a free market system, if you don't get what you want, you can only blame yourself for the choices you made. Under a socialist planned economy, if you don't get what you want, you can always blame the government. Hell, it's easier. But when you do manage to gain something big, you'll come to feel very good about it, about you, and about the free market system that made it possible. God bless America for what it was and can still be again. Join me again next Tuesday night, please, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another hour of insight by visiting my website at www.bbsradio.com/historyinyou. That's bbsradio.com/historyinyou. Leave me a message, send me an email, please tell me what you think. As always, I do wish to extend my gratitude to the folks at BBS Radio, my promoter and producers, Deborah, Doug, and Don, for making this show possible, and for all of the things you do to bring this show to our audience. Also, please remember to generously donate a contribution to our show. Your financial participation is a very valuable help for me. So please, give generously. Thank you in advance. As your host for this evening's show, this is George Rodriguez Walling wishing for all of you a very, very pleasant evening.